Ask anyone in Charleston about the West Virginia music scene, and you'll get responses ranging from venue reviews to summer fest suggestions to, of course, band recommendations. And no matter what kind of response you get, pretty sure it'll somehow lead back to Quiet, the Appalachian gypsy rock band that has been a fixture of the West Virginia music scene for quite some time. We sat down with Quiet's frontman and founder, Christopher Vincent, in the WV Public Studios to talk about the band's new record, Kiss of the Universe, and why their February 27th double album release show with Charleston's The Sea of the Sea might just be a turning point for the West Virginia music scene. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Joni.
Hi. Now I've seen your name in 20 different forms on the interwebs. How would you like me to refer to you during this interview? I've seen Christopher. I've seen Christopher Quiet.
Oh, yes.
Vincent.
Oh,
I've seen.
No. Christopher, please.
Christopher?
That's about as grandiose as it gets.
Okay. All right. What is your full length name, your full name? Is it Christopher Vincent?
Christopher Vincent. That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
Christopher Harris Vincent.
Okay, yeah. Cool. So, Christopher Harris Vincent, who are you, and what do you do?
I am the lead singer of Quiet. I don't do much else.
Where are you from originally?
I was born in Virginia. I was raised between Virginia, Ohio, West Virginia. I didn't stay in the same place until I was... I think I still haven't, actually. Never mind. I haven't spent a lot of time in one place.
Okay. Well, I saw that...
West Virginia as a whole, mostly in West Virginia.
Yeah. And I was trying to look at your bio, if you will. And I saw, you know, like people were saying how you, I guess, moved around when you were younger. And I guess you were in D.C. for some time.
Yeah.
And obviously Quiet was in Huntington. And now, I guess Quiet is now a Charleston-based band, correct?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. I founded it in Huntington, even though I started Quiet when I was 15. Do you want the whole story?
I want the absolute whole story, yes.
Okay. Let's see if I can do this. All right, so I started Quiet when I was 15. That's when I started playing music, but I didn't know how to play music, but mm-hmm. I still made albums.
Mm-hmm.
They were full compositions. They just sound completely whack, you know, and most of it was gibberish because it'd be like a lot of first take stuff because I just placed a lot of importance on just whatever I was feeling, whatever was in my heart. And I was like, nobody's going to hear this stuff anyways. So I started making albums and then I never let anybody listen to it because the first time I let somebody listen to it, it was my friends who I listened to music with all the time. We were listening to, you know, Velvet Underground, Pixies, you know, all kinds of grunge. We were those kinds of kids. And they put it in the CD player and they just started skipping through tracks.
Oh.
And then they ejected it. And I was like, why? And they were like...
And then they broke it against their knee and then they burnt it and they gave it back to you.
They said the CD quality was awful. So it was just... they called it unlistenable. That's what it was. They called it unlistenable. So I swore to never let anybody listen to my music ever again. And so I just made Quiet albums and closets and stuff until I was probably 22, I think, when I finally decided to put together a live project. That was because my friend was like, you need to really, he heard a track and he was like, you really, finally let somebody listen to it. You really need to get a band together to do this. And I laughed in his face and I said, who would want to listen to this? That's what I said. I still kind of feel that way, but like.
Do you still talk to those friends? Are they still your
friend
friends?
I do.
Yeah.
You know what? I do.
Okay.
I talk to, yeah.
True
I talked
friends.
About everybody in the story.
Yeah.
Everybody I talked about in the story I talk to currently, yeah.
Yeah, they're not, you're like hit list. You're not going to make like a Taylor Swift breakup record about them and how they've betrayed your trust. And
no, I have one name on my blacklist and you won't believe who it is.
Are you actually going to say it?
It's a person named, no, I'm not going to say it. Yes, I'm going to say it. Christopher Vincent. Swear to God. I didn't even know that until after he was on my blacklist.
He's from West Virginia?
Yeah, I think that he might be actually a nice guy, but it was a really bad situation at an Eve 6 show, and it was really bad. I had his card in my pocket, and I remember it. I was like, what is his name? Because it's going on my blacklist, and it was Christopher Vincent. I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'm sure we would get along
If you ever needed someone to fill in for the band, you could get him on stage and they'll be like, Christopher Vincent, the front man for Quiet. And then
that'll
he's like,
do.
Yeah, yeah,
I really think I can be replaced by a child even. So
no, don't say that.
I think so.
I don't think so.
Just wait. just
is see. That going to be happening on February 27th? You're going to have a kid come up on stage?
I'm not going to ruin it.
Okay, sorry. Well, yeah. I'm also jumping ahead, but okay. I should mention that you know your band has evolved over time. Yeah. You know the lineups,
over
everything.
The past week, we've
well, and you. When did you officially start releasing music as a band, as Quiet? Was that around like 2009?
2009.
Okay.
Well, we didn't do an album until probably 2011 mm-hmm. or something.
And that was a 10-piece, right? Or what?
I don't know. Well, it was the first show we had 13 people on stage. And then like the second show, it was a different number. The third show was a different number, and it just was like that for a while. Then I got kind of a core that I was enjoying playing with. The original idea behind Quiet, I don't know if I've ever told anybody this, the original idea was to have revolving members. Mm-hmm. Was like some of them I'd use like a couple times, but mostly just gather whatever musicians I could. But
so long as they knew the music, then you'd be this collective sort
yeah,
of thing.
Because I didn't plan on playing a lot of shows, you know. Like I figured, you know, four shows, you know, quarterly show, you know, and mm-hmm. get new musicians. And that was the whole idea because I didn't want it to be like every other band, but now I'm okay with it.
Yeah. So it got whittled down to, or are you now like a 5-piece? Is that correct? Or are you six?
2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6-piece.
Okay.
And then when we play domestically or when she's able, Shayla Leftridge comes mm-hmm. and sings with us.
Okay. And everyone is based in Charleston, in or around Charleston?
Charleston and Huntington.
Okay.
Yeah. And in between.
Okay. So why did you, I mean, going back to that, you started the band kind of in Huntington. When did you decide that you were going to kind of make it more of a Charleston-based
band?
When
I moved to Charleston.
Okay. And yeah. That was in 2012?
I'm really not sure.
Okay.
I have no mile markers or anything. I can't even think about it. I'm not sure. I've been telling people I've lived here for 3 years, but that's been about a year now. So I think...
So what is Quiet, though? Like, what is Quiet? Why is it spelled without a U?
I have no idea. I really don't.
But do you think it was your idea for the name? Do you think it was someone else's?
It was most certainly not somebody else's.
It was yours?
I think at that point in my life, I didn't have any friends. Oh, that's true. I didn't have any friends. I ran away from home, and I had my own apartment in Arlington, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And I was just there alone, and I just spent months and months alone in that apartment just trying to learn how to play music and playing Final Fantasy.
That's always a good thing.
I played basketball every once in a while.
Oh, that's not as fun. Final Fantasy is better. Was that Nintendo 64, or is that a PS2? What was that? What console?
That was PS1.
PS1? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It was Final Fantasy 9, I think, at that point.
Okay. Yeah.
That was a good one.
See, I had a PS2, so that's what I was playing it on. Why did you look to music to try to do this? Like, did you listen to a song one day, maybe by Bowie or by Nick Cave, and just think, I want to try to make something like that?
I have quite literally no idea why it started happening. I just started banging on a guitar when I was 15, and then I just toughed through it. And it says on the bio too. I don't know if you read that particular bio, but I thought that the guitar was in tune when all the tuning keys were in line. And I must have played like that for a year until a friend came by and was like, that's not right, you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't really seriously start playing music until I was 18, but I was always creating it, you know. It was just like a byproduct of my existence. I can't explain it. Just an urge to do it. I don't know.
Did you feel like a vessel? Did you just continue doing a self-taught sort of thing for it, or did you get professional?
Yeah, no. I've never been. I've taken a couple vocal lessons since I've lived here in Charleston. I didn't keep up with that. I don't remember why. I've never taken a guitar lesson or piano or drums or anything like that. I was in jazz ensemble in high school for drums, but they never let me play because it was awful. That was fair.
But you got into jazz ensemble without much training, right?
I think that
they just let you in. They're like, oh, let the Final Fantasy basketball player in.
Yeah, he's fine. We need a triangle player.
Yeah. So. Oh, see, I didn't really have much. I played a little bit of piano when I was younger, and I obviously did some radio when I was younger in college. But Otherwise, I was just a music fan that kind of got into this gig.
I was too. I was playing with my Legos, listening to grunge music. You know, that
as one does.
I mean,
yeah.
You know what? Yeah. Wow. I just had a revelation. I had a kind of a rough time in my early years, and I think that radio was probably my salvation. That was it, I think. I think I just gravitated towards music because that's just, it must have become a part of me by the time I was 6 or 7, you know, just listening to the radio all the time.
So you've released a few records with Quiet. I think the first one was, what, Composition Number 7?
Yeah.
Okay, and then Composition Number 8, which is also Pet Driftwood, came out in 2014. And for at least the last one, I'm not sure if Composition Number 7, that one you recorded with Eddie Ashworth, correct?
Only this one and the last one, the okay. new one and the last one.
Yeah. Okay, how did you get to know Eddie Ashworth out of Athens, Ohio?
Saw us at a show and said that he wanted to produce our record. Yeah.
It was as simple as that.
Yeah, we had a little sit down, and I made it super awkward. And
what do you mean?
Well, you know, I'm just kind of got thrown into this whole thing. Like, I don't know anything about music business, or I mean, I still like can't even remember the word publicist. 80% of the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just I'm sitting here trying to fight through a business conversation with a veteran, and I have no idea. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. It just made it weird, but he still decided to go with this.
Well, he saw, I mean, he's been in the business for so long, he probably saw something in you all that really...
That's absolutely what happened.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
Saw something he could monopolize on.
Of course. Evil businessman. Evil music businessman. Asshole. Actually, he's a very, very nice man. I'm happy to have got to know him over the last year or so. It's funny how those gigs are, though. You know, you don't really expect a big thing coming out of it. You'll do a show, you'll get paid, whatever. But then you get the people that are showing up, and who knows, they could be radio people, they could be show people, they could be music producers, in your case, with Eddie Ashworth. And that could lead into a whole different direction for where you're going.
When I was growing up, I had always heard, I was surrounded by religious people, and they always said, you never know who's an angel, you know. And that to me, because I'm not a religious person, that kind of transformed into, you never know who's a musician. I noticed that early on in my life, like, because it's just raggedy people, you know what I mean? Like, they talk, when I was growing up, they talked about homeless people being angels, you know what I mean? That was in an effort to, you know, really care for even the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And in my case, I mean, a lot of people looked homeless and were actually phenomenal musicians, you know what I mean? So it's like...
And now they're called hipsters.
And it's so weird. Like, you can't anticipate how good anybody is or what anybody's abilities are. That goes for everything across the board. But, you know, I live a life of music and I'm surrounded by musicians. I mean, if you go to a venue, there are going to be musicians there, but you don't know who they are, you know?
It's true.
So,
I mean, last week, in fact, you and I can't even... I feel like there's probably like half of the room were West Virginia bands watching Mountain Stage.
Yeah, there were so many bands in there.
Yeah. Like it was you, it was Ona, who will even be on their show this coming weekend. And then who else? The Horse Traders,
yeah.
Ghost Fleet, Aaron Fisher.
Yeah.
It's great. It's nice. You're right. You never really know which will be musicians and which will be fans, or maybe both.
Oh yeah, and I'm sorry. Yeah, on top of that, we get a lot of gigs from going to the Purple Fiddle, where there is in the heart of West Virginia, in a town of 600 people. We play to 20 people, and then we get festival gigs out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild. I mean, we even go all over the East Coast, and people hear us even outside of West Virginia and say, I saw you at that place in West Virginia, which is bizarre because as a whole, we've probably paid to like maybe 300 people there, maybe 350 people altogether over the course of 7 times of being there. And so many, I hear people seeing us more there than anywhere else.
Yeah. Well, it helps. I think your band's music is not what you'd consider West Virginia music. It's not, you know, it's maybe not like a stereotypical rock or pop or anywhere, even beyond West Virginia. And by having this kind of gypsy rock eclectic feel, I think people can instantly remember you. Like they know that you are quiet. You're not some other bar band. You are this, you know, at the time could be 10 piece, 6 piece, 5 piece, whatever band doing this chaotically enjoyable music.
Alternatively, when we go out of town, we tell everybody that all the music in West Virginia sounds like us.
Really? Do you really?
Yeah, we say that we're like a dime a dozen. Like, we're not even like the good.
Really?
We're not even the good version of the music.
Wait, why do you say that?
I don't know. To get them here.
I guess it works. I mean, just demeaning yourself and then making people think that there's much. I mean, not to say there is really great music. You're part of that scene.
Yeah, sure.
But, yeah, okay.
But, interesting. You know, we go up there and, like, you know, play Arabic war songs and Appalachian tunes and gypsy tunes. And we just, it's just funny to me to say, honestly, it's an entertainment thing.
Yeah.
That's really what it is.
You know, you should ask the Go to WV tourism people to say, hey, guys, we have a great campaign for you. We suck. But, you know, other people suck less. That's why we should get people in West Virginia. That would sell well. Interesting. Well, that's good, though, that you're able to travel around so frequently to go around even beyond West Virginia into different states with the music. When you go out there and you, beyond telling them that you suck, what do you tell them about the West Virginia music scene? Like, how would you describe the West Virginia music scene to someone else?
Well, those are two questions, because I don't talk about the West Virginia music scene much. Most people aren't curious about West Virginia. They're curious about us.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't get on that conversation a lot. When I do, I talk about this place like I still honestly talk about this place like it's still got it's just in an era of potential, like mm-hmm. potentiality right now. You know what I mean? It's great around here, but it's not to fruition yet. It's not. It needs just that one little thing. You know, just like that little Seattle bug or something. You know, just
yeah.
needs that one little thing. And it could happen, because there's a lot of people here that are, you know, starving for that. A lot of people here are ready for it, ready to get behind it, ready to support it. You already have such a vibrant community supporting each other, you know, a really communal atmosphere. Now, I don't know what we need. It's not non-existent. It's just, like I said, in a state of potentiality, if that is a word.
I think that kind of makes sense. It's I think the ideas are floating around. Obviously, you kind of have a feeling of what needs to happen or what shouldn't happen anymore to fulfill this idea of a vibrant music scene. In some regards, it is. I mean, you have the full productions, like, you know, the mountain stages or the symphony orchestras or, you know, the bar scenes like Boulevard Tavern, bringing people live on the levee, festival, whatever. But then there's certain things that it just... Maybe the lack of support, the lack of media coverage, just something else is missing to really connect people to their musical roots here.
Yeah, there can sometimes be like a Stone Age idealism too amongst the. I don't know. You know, it's a touchy subject. I probably shouldn't be talking about any of this.
You should go ahead.
But
it's fine. Everyone talks about it. That's it. Anyone I interview that's from West Virginia, this topic always comes up. There's a reason why, because it needs to.
There has to be more support from the venues and from the organizers and from, I mean, people wanting to facilitate this change. There's still too much money in the game. I mean, there's still some instances around here where, you know, you go out all over the America and there's venues that will say that you can play, and it's like it's your gift, it's their gift to you to let you play their, you know, club, and musicians are expected to go out and do all the promotions and stuff like that, you know. And it's not as bad around here, but it's still, you run into that wall every once in a while, and that all has to do with some previous mentality, you know. People don't have an attitude of investment where they can't see further down the road of like putting money in a musician's pocket, and then you're going to get more quality musicians, you're going to get more quality experience, and the people that are in that audience are going to feel that experience. They want to come back to your venue. They're going to want to give more. It'll be a self-perpetuating thing if it would just get over that precipice, you know?
But people can't think that far ahead. They want something that's going to be immediately satisfying. Yeah, absolutely.
And the whole music industry, the whole local music industry is cash in hand. you know, just like a server at a restaurant, mm-hmm. you know, you'd stay at that job and keep doing that same crappy thing day in and day out because they put cash in your hand at the end of the night and you can go pay your bills. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I just want somebody to take a chance. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that brings us to a good point of the conversation. So February 27th, you will be releasing, you and Quiet will be releasing your new record, Composition Number 9. And you're also going to be putting on a double album release show with Charleston's The Sea the Sea. That's Mira Stanley and Chucky Costa. They're an indie folk duo. And full disclosure for those listening, I actually am presenting the show for A Change of Tune and hosting it. It's going to be really fun. Puns will abound, possibly sheepdog pictures as well. But with that said, though, how did you and Quiet, bond over this idea of doing a collective communal release party show?
I think that was just Mira and I.
Yeah.
I don't think Quiet knew about it.
I mean, I can't. You told Quiet after the fact. You're like, hey, guys, we're going to do this show.
I think so. Okay. I would say that's unfortunately how it goes most of the time, but I really think it's a good, it's a well-oiled machine. Like things get done, and we haven't really pinned down that collaborative effort of, we don't have band meetings or anything like mm-hmm. that. We could really maybe improve it, but as of right now, I mean, things get done. So, yeah. And my bass player Maddox helps me out with a lot of logistics and a lot of technical stuff, and he's my opinion man. And so I'll get an idea and then I'll run it by him. And then if we're both on the same page, generally everybody in Quiet trusts us to make the right decision.
So they were fine with the idea of doing this February 27th show when you brought up the...
They loved it. Well, I've got musicians. They just want to play, mm-hmm. you know. Of course, they're interested in what's in the best interest of Quiet. But again, we have a checks and balances system just between Maddox and I being two logicians, you know, being able to really... being already justifying it to ourselves, they kind of inherently trust us, and I don't think we let them down very often. So they're like, when I say you want to play this, then you know, let's do it.
Yeah. And when it did, I guess Mira approached you all with this idea of a co-headlining show.
Yes. A few years ago, she was trying to make this show thing happen for years, and then just serendipitously, she was passing through. We decided on February 27th, and then I asked everybody involved with the album if we could get the album done in time. And everybody, except the producer, was Eddie was hesitant, but we made it happen.
Yeah. I guess you're kind of picking your fingers, like, I don't know, maybe we didn't.
I literally, that's what I was doing before I came here, was sending that in.
Yeah, so you're going to have physicals at the release show then, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. I should probably bring up before we go any further with February 27th, this record, Composition Number 9, was fully kickstarted. You did a campaign to make sure this album was released, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. There's way more behind that $7,000 than people know, though.
So $7,000 was the limit or what you're asking for?
That's what we're asking for.
And yeah.
You know, a few people said that was that's a lot. You know, our last one was like $4,000. Mm-hmm.
You also kickstarted the Composition Number 8.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we got $4,000 out of that. We're very thankful for that.
Okay.
That's $7,000. We got that $7,000. It was celebratory, you know, not everybody thought we were going to make it, and we made it, and we didn't, you know, donate any of our own money or anything. It was all supporter funded.
Yeah.
And, they deposited it in our account right after taking $800 out. It's the Kickstarter fee.
Oh.
It's like a massive.
Okay.
And then we started paying people out, and then that's gone now. That $7,000 is gone.
And it was totally used. It's not like you needed any more or any less. Like, that was the perfect amount for.
Oh, no. It costs about. All said and done, it'll cost about $13,000 to do this album.
So did you all have to chip in for the additional $6,000?
That's all coming from show money and stuff.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
That's
interesting.
That's all coming from money we raised.
Well, did you decide on Kickstarter over Indiegogo or for any reason? GoFundMe, I guess?
It's, we tend to gravitate towards the more popular platforms.
Okay.
And go ahead and pay the fee. You know, it's like Indiegogo. I've seen so many reputable bands get on Indiegogo, and it just, it doesn't happen for them.
Yeah.
I mean, they get to keep whatever money they get, but still, we want to hit that goal, or we want to not hit that goal. You know what I mean? It's like the, like that drive.
Yeah. Kinda, you know, well, you
that,
hit it.
That incentive.
Yeah. I actually remember seeing you that night. You were at the Empty Glass.
I was in a haze.
Yeah, and you were so just, you're out of it, but in a nice way, like in a
surreal,
just, yeah, satisfied way.
Yeah,
it was great.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. Well, so this album's really for...
You know what the average donation was? It was $27.
Huge.
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 It's huge.
I could just cut off the interview right there and I'd be satisfied. No, maybe that's great though. That the fans decided to show their love for you all again. You know, because where else would you be without them, and where would they be without you?
It's a really it's really communal.
And you have a you have a devoted fan base
because of that reason. I mean, yeah. It's just from the foundation of Quiet. It was all. It's like we're not going up there to like express our feelings. We're going up there to entertain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a different from a lot of. I mean, a lot of. I don't call myself a musician. I call myself an entertainer because that's, I mean, there's really just no point of being up there otherwise. It's not really even an ego thing for me. I really just like I feel decimated if there's one person in the audience not enjoying it out of hundreds of people. And it bothers me, you know, and I usually talk to those people and
like Christopher Vincent, I guess the other Christopher Vincent who... You just messed up your life.
He was a technician, and he did not have any manners.
Oh, okay.
And I'm usually very patient with that. Mm-hmm. I was very patient with it, but it got done right.
Yeah.
Anyways, but yeah, I have to talk to those people because I feel uneasy if it's not a total, you know, reception. And it is a flaw as well. I mean, there should be a lot of not caring, but I still do.
You care too much.
I care too much.
Yeah. I think we all care too much. You know, we can be totally positive, think that we can take on anything until the point that we get someone to tell us that you suck or your music is unlistenable. Or as someone recently told me, I need to learn from someone in some part of Pennsylvania how to be a radio host. And then why am I chosen to be the one on public radio?
And so this is such a problem for me because I don't know if I'll be able to tough it out for the rest of my life because I still have social anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm in the spotlight now, so people hate me. People hate me that have never met me. And I hear it from other people and I'm like, is that verbatim? They said verbatim. I don't understand it. And it doesn't feel good. You know, like I said, if that one person in the audience isn't satisfied, then I mean, it bothers me. But when somebody just really despises me, I'm really trying to get over that and just be like, but some part of me's got to question, you know, am I doing something wrong? Could I be doing something better?
Yeah, but you have to think though, if someone doesn't like you and you don't even know them, you don't know why they don't even like you exactly. Then I mean, there's no point reasoning
could
with
hear
that.
This. Yeah, but somebody could hear this interview
and then hate you even more. They
it
could
sounds
hate
like a tool. Yeah. But yeah,
that's their life,
there's
though.
Not a lot. I know. So you can say that all day, but that's not how
it's
feels.
It's true. I know. Yeah. I just said that. Like, you know, you could just keep saying, oh, yeah, I can take on anything. And then as soon as that's done, you try to take on something. You're like, oh, just kidding. I want to be naive. And, you know, that's bliss. Ignorance is bliss compared to what is going on right now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, it's interesting. Your personality is very, very mellow, very quiet, introverted almost. And then, of course, when you get up on stage, the band... Definitely brings out a different side of you.
There's some mix between introvert and extrovert that happens with some people. It's not so black and white. I was introvert my entire life until this whole thing started. I was introvert for 2 or 3 years in Quiet, and it was really bad for business.
As a frontman for a band,
I didn't talk to anybody. I would go to my dark corner and I would sit in the corner and people would approach me and be like, that was amazing. And I didn't understand why it was amazing. I was so self-conscious about my music. You know, I was like, I don't understand what you're talking about. And then that gave off the air of, please leave me alone. I'm a tool, you know? and that happened for years and I had no idea why people didn't like me. I had to teach myself how to smile in public. You know, I had to go through all kinds of human training and stuff. And I knew at the end of that, I would actually feel, you know, how I feel like I'm being genuine right now. I don't think I've been, but I've been very disingenuous in the past trying to be genuine. It's just been a mess. like I said, just an introvert trying to live that lifestyle of an extrovert. But now, you know, I have some drinks and I'm loosened up. You know, I was at that at your production recently.
Oh, the Why Listen Party at Black Sheep.
Party. Yeah. I had a great time, but I immediately started slamming whiskey.
Yeah.
There was no way I was going to handle that otherwise.
Yeah, the very beginning when you, so this was a public broadcasting party, part of our NPR Generation Listen Initiative. And the point of it is just to listen to brand new music. And at the event, we actually debuted a new song from Quiet called Daddy's Too Old, which wasn't even mastered, but it's still great. And we debuted it and the people rated it and talked about it. And before the event happened, Chris, you came out to me and you're like, I want to leave. I can't be here. And I was like, no, I mean, Chris, you can totally be here. You can totally, it's totally, believe me, you're going to be fine. People are going to love it. You're like, I don't know. You just kept looking around the room like people had daggers behind their backs just waiting to stab you in your music, which wasn't the case, right? I mean, you felt a lot of love that night.
It was very well received. Yeah. And I did feel, I was, again, overwhelmed. And pretty much any situation like that that I'm afraid of at first, it always turns out okay. And
yeah,
I don't know. You know,
that's with Mountain Stage, with my show, public broadcasting, whatever. I never want to make someone feel uncomfortable or put someone in a spotlight that they're going to be pissed about or emotionally damaged about later on. And that's why, you know, like we listen to the music, we try to figure out if it'll fit on Mountain Stage or fit on a change of tune, whatever. And then we can go from there. But I thought you were ready. I thought the music was going to be fine. You didn't have anything to worry about. And I'm glad that at the end of the day, you didn't. Then people gave you fives, like they loved it.
Yeah, that was. Oh, I had, and after the show, I had a few. There was three people specifically that told me that they only voted a five one time that night.
That's for your music.
And I was like, that's really great, thank you. And they were like, no, it didn't know it was you. Like all three, none of them knew it was me. And it was the only time they did a five. That happened with three different people.
Yeah, I had someone tell me that they, as soon as they got home, they downloaded music from the West Virginia people. And they became instant fans.
That's great.
And that's great.
I mean, especially David Bowie being in that.
I know.
Iggy Pop and stuff, you know.
Yeah. And you're playing along them. And people, you know, and we had Father John Misty.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mavis Staples and Melanie Ward and all this kind of brand new music we're debuting. And some of them did get fives. You got a five.
I got the five.
So it's pretty cool. That means you're pretty much better than the ones that didn't get fives, right?
It's done.
The Grammy nominated, Grammy award winning artist.
It's over. Debate over.
Well, I think that those kind of events help the music scene. You know, it gets people out, gets them introduced to new acts.
Without a doubt. And no, I'm so gracious for you doing that. I mean, like, quite involved or not, I mean, that's awesome because that's the kind of culture that I want to live in, you know?
Yeah.
That's the kind of area I want to live in. And you've been such a driving force and such a pillar.
Well, thanks.
You're making yourself a pillar.
Well, thanks.
We're not going to be able to do without you soon.
Thanks.
The whole thing will collapse.
Well, that's very sweet of you to say that. Thank you. And I guess at the end of the day, I like my job. And whatever comes out of it, like, you know, helping the community, that's just an added bonus. And, you know, I'm happy to help. But I do want to get back, though, to February 27th with your show. And with this idea of just creating this community, this bigger, brighter, better West Virginia community. Why is this February 27th show different? Why is this, depending on how well it goes, going to impact the scene?
We're walking out on a limb right now. We're building our own production. This is something I used to do in Huntington, but there were smaller venues, I'm sorry, smaller than the Clay Center, but bigger than available around here. Say like the Moose Lodge or something. You know, there were venues in Huntington where we put on our own production. We got control of the bar, what was stocked at the bar. We even got bar sales. Yeah, we got to decorate the entire place ourselves. The guy let us do anything we wanted to. It was called Icon at the time. I don't know what it's called now. It's on 4th Avenue. And we would make our own productions, and that was where it was at. That was like the pinnacle, you know.
So basically it was just like a dollhouse, and you could decorate it and do whatever you wanted inside it.
Yeah. Oh, I have so many stories to tell you.
Yeah.
So many stories. Anybody that was at those shows would probably say the same. We tried to make, anyways. So we had like an immersive atmosphere, and that was, I really liked building that presentation. So that's one thing, is having complete control over the presentation, because you also have control over the sound, over when you sound check, load in, how the stage looks, everything, down to the very nth degree. And so I moved here to Charleston, and there's only traditional venues. And
yeah.
I contemplated the Moose Lodge and all that. And but then we took it to the Clay Center, and we're just throwing in some money in hopes that we can build our own presentation and we can take it to the next level, you know, and take that step for everybody else, take that risk, incur that risk for everybody else that might want to put on their own presentation, you know, because the more people that do it, the more facilitating like the Clay Center will be. That's a big, beautiful venue, and when it's not being used, it's a shame. And if you can get people organizing and you can get people in that place, and you know, then they'll be more facilitating, and we're really just trying to build honesty with the venue, which is, you know, the ownership there. I don't know how they feel about the local music scene, but you know, Rob Rosano started up the soundcheck sessions in an effort to get the local scene a kickstart too, and it's happening. It just needs the right ingredients, you know, and this is one of them. This is one of them taking control, you know, masters your own fate. If it goes bad, it's the organizer's fault, not the venue's, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, this is a DIY, do-it-yourself production, and depending on how it goes, there could be another one, could be bigger, could be smaller, could be multiplied.
The important thing is we try.
Yeah, and we'll see how it goes. Well, yeah. Well, it should be an interesting show. Obviously, both of you, you and the C, I think your music's great, and I'm excited to see the new material that you guys are going to be putting on, especially, and also Spencer Elliott, who's going to be opening up for you all as well.
That's right.
So it's going to be just packed full of West Virginia talent, and also West Virginia audience, because yes. That's, you know, at the end of the day, we talk about the venues, the music, but really it's the audience that's fueling the West Virginia music scene.
Like, it's all just a big circle. I mean, yeah. This place is just like a village. I mean, it's different from a lot of cities because it's a capital city, but it's tiny, you know. There are circles, and everybody wants to be involved, and when they're not involved, they feel like they missed something, you know.
Yeah. Do you have anything else that you want to say about the February 27th show, or even the new release that will be coming out at the show, Composition Number 9?
I can't think of anything I'd like to say. I'm really proud of the record. Really, really proud of it. The last one, I never really got proud of. I think it's still good, but I never got, you know.
It was featured in a lot of, I mean, a lot. Get Found was
yeah,
featured
I don't,
in.
Yeah, I don't care about that. I mean, just like, for me, I mean, just, I have a favorite child now.
Yeah,
so
and this is it.
That happened, yeah. But I can say that because they're not actually alive.
The rest of the band feel the same way too about this record. Like, this is the
unanimous.
Okay,
unanimous. Anybody who's heard it and anybody who's had any part of it, yeah, it's been unanimous.
Good.
I mean, in a big way.
Yeah.
Just like a yeah.
So, what are you after this record comes out, the February 27th show? What's the next thing for Quiet?
We're either going to be rock stars or I quit. I'm serious. I can't do much better than this. I mean, I can release another one. I can release another one after that. But it's like, if this one, if the public isn't ready for the sound, or if I can't get the ball rolling on this, then I'm doing something wrong, or the world's not poised for it, or something, you know. I mean, something's just wrong in the whole chemical makeup of the endeavor. So I don't see the point in just beating a dead horse. Just take my legacy and, you know, move to, you know, Guadalajara. You know I love you
so much. Quiet's newest release, Kiss of the Universe, will be available for purchase this Saturday, February 27th in Charleston at a Change of Tunes presentation of Quiet and the Sea of the Seas double album release show. Don't have a ticket? Win yourself a pair on facebook.com/achangeoftune. To hear more from Quiet, tune into A Change of Tune, airing Saturdays at 10 p.m. Eastern on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.